This is down to brass tacks. This person says, those people who complained about not getting hampers, are those persons really in need, or are they just looking for freeness? I didn't like the stance you took. I was part of a group organizing help for persons in need. We focused on persons who really needed help. None of the persons who called gave any indication that they were in dire straits. One caller said he's a farmer. He must have some kind of income. Where is the balance you are always talking about today? Well, you know, I can't sit here and tell you whether the people are really in need. The one that struck me was the guy who said that basically he did articulate that he felt that he needed assistance and that he was overlooked on the basis of his politics. Now, I got to be realistic and recognize that there are people who can sometimes, you know, let the politics go too far, and that works both ways. But I can only go on the basis of what he has told me and recognize that there are some people who can be petty. Political operatives, not necessarily the politicians themselves, but the people that they ask to do things for them also can behave in that manner. So I think I got to recognize both sides of this coin. And in so doing, I think that's enough balance that I can bring to it. There are people who are going to cry wolf because of their politics. And then there are those people who are definitely going to decide that they're not giving people any assistance because they know their politics too well. And I hold to the position that I've articulated already on this issue of politicians and their supporters being the ones who are relied upon to give out that kind of assistance. And I don't think anything has happened to change my view on that. This is down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah. Well, I just got in, but I was listening to your program while driving. Now, we are talking about black all the time. If you had the march, you talk about in America. And I start looking at the policies of the black governments in Barbados. And if we can't get politicians to acknowledge that they are both, the two major parties are all black people. Now, for some unknown reason, I don't know why, but I believe we as electors of Barbados should start putting some systems or asking politicians to put things in place where we could see what we would consider consistency and equality between the two political parties, because they are all black. Now, I question what took place with the Auditor General report. Not that I question what he's writing, what I am questioning. Now, there are two political parties that was running this government in Barbados for the last 50 odd years. Now, if you're going to investigate, I think it should come with some fairness and, as you like your favorite word, balance.
Mm-hmm.
If the BSB asks that the 10 years of the Democratic Labour Party should be investigated,
yes,
I believe on the same end to bring a balance, it should be the last 10 years of the BSB and the last 10 years of the Democratic Labour Party if you're doing an investigation. Because it's only yesterday running through some papers I saw on Thursday, June the 21st, 2007, police detained Auditor General. This is in Hamilton, Bermuda. You can remember that report?
So you're suggesting what?
I am asking, I am not saying that the Auditor General is wrong or that he is right. What I am saying, that we were hearing of accusations for the longest time. You should not limit only the 10 years of the last administration. If you can bring a fair and a balanced
I think a more reasonable request has to do with what projects you are going to investigate as Auditor General. Because as someone said to me, in the period, we have also had the situation with respect to Four Seasons. And if you are looking at what has gone right and what has gone wrong, why is it that Four Seasons was not among the projects that was examined in light of the fact that there was a government, the NIS had put some money into Four Seasons at one stage? Now, the other question which has been raised, and I think we all have to contend with these, is how much natural justice would have obtained in the conclusions which have been reached. In other words, if you do your investigation and there are findings, then the people against whom you may have some kinds of accusations coming would normally be put in a position to put their side of the story, because over the years, I have seen departments being put in a position to say, well, this is our response to what the Auditor General has said. So those areas are some of the issues that I've heard raised coming out of this Auditor General report.
What I am getting at, David, and I'm just looking for balance, because I reach the stairs now, political parties are there to me, neither am I looking forward for any help from them. The point that I am looking at, who really advised the Auditor General to decide on investigation into this house,
I believe that the Auditor General makes that determination on his own, as far as I'm aware. I don't see any indication, and it is not said at all in the report, that the Auditor General is taking instructions for the 2019. Now, there are special reports that are sometimes requested by the Minister of Finance. If the Minister believes that there is good reason to look at a specific area, and you know we've had some of those special reports over the years, but the annual exercise, as I understand it, is motivated by the judgment of the Office of the Auditor General.
What I would like to see, if the Auditor General had produced other findings prior to 2018.
I don't understand where you're going with this, let's be logical.
Stop
it. Because every year of the 10-year period that you are talking about, there were reports by the Auditor General.
But that's what you're asking.
So what you're asking for? All you have to do is to go and check those reports. They're there. You're making it seem as though for that 10-year period, there were no Auditor General reports, and that's not so.
I never said that.
Come on. You've implied it, man.
David, I don't come on this here to use the media.
Do you agree with me that for every year of the previous 10 years of the Labour Party, there were reports by the Auditor General?
But that was my asking. So
how are you asking?
All right, well, the other question, though, and this is the last question I'm going to ask everybody. Let's get on. The other thing is this Public Accounts Committee. I do not like the structure of the Public Accounts Committee. Because if you are in government and you lost government, you become the leader of it, doesn't become the leader of the Public Accounts Committee. Now, he has now to investigate himself, and they don't see the fairness in it. You follow where I'm coming from now? The Public Accounts, you were a minister or whatever the case may be during your reign. You lost government, and automatically, government...
Your head sounds so confused today. You don't normally sound so...
It is not confused. You try to confuse other people, but you're not confusing me. I asked a simple question. No, if the Public Accounts Committee, just like Avelino is the leader of the opposition, so he'd lead the Accounts Committee. If he was in government prior to then, he would become the leader of the Public Accounts Committee. So then you're asking the Public
Accounts
Committee
to
investigate.
You're really mixing up people's heads here. First of all, that issue would only arise if the person who is now leader of the opposition was in office just prior to taking up the post of leader of the opposition in the particular session of parliament that we are talking about. In other words, if, let's say, 2 years before he took up the post, he was a minister, then you could have that situation where that person is being asked to reflect on decisions that they took and to be highly selective, perhaps, in what they're going to look at and what they're not going to look at. In this case, Mr. Atherley was not a minister of government for a considerable length of time, and therefore it would be strange to see the Public Accounts Committee going back to events that occurred 11 and 12 years ago. It tends to deal with things that are relatively recent. So I don't understand why how that becomes an issue. All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Right, okay. Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
I have a couple questions I want to ask and to get your feedback on them. But the first one relates to the matter of the march the protest that was supposed to happen on Saturday. Did I hear you earlier in the program indicate you could understand why only 10 were allowed?
Yes.
The number of 10 was
yes,
allowed?
I thought that had a lot to do with the COVID issues and stuff. And even, look, they had marches out in New York. And I have heard the governor of New York City urge the people who were huddled together in these marches to go and get tested for COVID, because you can create an environment where the people are too close to each other.
Right, but don't you think, in the case here, though, it would have been quite easy to have allowed a significantly higher number and have the persons observe all the appropriate protocols?
All things are possible.
Don't you think that our people are sufficiently aware and concerned about preserving their own health that they would have observed such?
I don't know. I can't tell you that I can speak.
Because I looked at a couple that were showcased across the world. I remember seeing one on a massive playing field, football or something like that, where you had heaven knows how many, and you know they were all observing the protocols that would have been stipulated.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, in the midst of COVID here, we had supermarket shopping. Massey, Whole Town, Warren's, Popular, all those. In the situations where, other than for when there was one melee within the car park up Kendall Hill, I saw, must have been easily in every case, over 150 people at these various supermarkets assembled,
right,
and distanced. And where this march was being held on Saturday is an area that would have been...
It could have accommodated more people, in your judgment.
Yes, distance, very, very many more. So my question is...
What do you think motivated the authorities, therefore?
Don't you think there might have been a measure of self-censorship? That we are so timid that we are thinking we might have been offending the U.S.?
It's possible. There's another interpretation to that, that generally speaking, we tend to be far more conservative as a country. We also may be trying as best
but,
as we
but
can.
But when you say conservative, yeah, in this case, meaning what?
Meaning that we don't want to upset the apple cart.
Very right. In this case, that we would not want to upset the United States.
Not just the United States, but there's also, you know, in all of this, people are also looking to avoid encouraging people in their own country to start focusing on things that they may believe or perceive as being in need of change.
Yes, and do you agree that several of the issues that the folks are protesting about in the U.S., because the death of Floyd was really only what probably was the last straw, but don't you think there may very well be many issues here?
Will you tell me? What do you see as the issues here? Come, you tell me. Well, I always got the opportunity to speak, so therefore I want to hear from people like you.
All right. Okay.
And the very fact that you may be reluctant to identify those things tells me a lot.
I'm not reluctant at all.
Yeah.
Actually, because I called yesterday, but I was close to the news time, so after holding a long time, so I gotten it a decent time today. So, but basically, this morning you were talking about a number of issues relating to how wealth distribution
and stuff.
Yeah, exists in Barbados and contracts and so on. Those sorts of things are things that, as you rightly said to somebody not too long ago, too, people talk about on the street a lot. You may not have any organized groupings that fully and publicly articulate and ventilate these issues, but they're generally of concern. And even to the ordinary fella, there are a lot of things that he sees, he feels, he himself may not be fully able to articulate, but they are of concern, very much so. Just as would happen or has been happening in the U.S., where you have, yes, very articulate people who organize these things, because when they speak to persons, the persons identify with the issues, but they themselves would not have been able to put them forward in the same way and mobilize the numbers that are being mobilized to come out and show dissatisfaction and the like. So that the socioeconomic side is just as significant, well, very significant here as well, and more so because we are a majority black country. I heard one caller yesterday, Ms. P, call and indicate you have a black political directorate, the black majority, et cetera, so we are to blame.
You have to
coach that, her comment, though. Sorry, you have to deal with that with more than one grain of salt, because you have to look behind what maintains that situation. And one of the things I would say, though, is that certainly at the political level, there has to be a determination that what would be the equivalent to the affirmative action that was taken in the U.S. is taken here, where you deliberately set out to try to bring some balance through whatever mechanisms and over a period of time, some balance to what exists now.
One of the important aspects of this international movement that, if you can call it that, that we are seeing right now is this. If countries like Australia, the United States, and Britain have policies that are against the best interests of blacks in their own countries, there is also the reality that those policies can extend to foreign policy positions. That is why this whole concern about how the Europeans are blacklisting countries like ours and stuff.
And they will keep doing it.
Because
the intent is to shut down the offshore.
It's not just that. There's also that hint of the the bad policies that they have at home extending to how they deal with countries like ours. I mean,
you're basically talking about...
And you're going to watch China as well, huh? Don't fool yourself.
Very much so.
You've got to watch China very, very closely, because they also, they are not accustomed to seeing black people nowhere, you know.
That's right. And hence we are seeing the ridiculous treatment that has been meted out to blacks there, particularly recently in the COVID environment.
And, you know, we are trying to court Africa a bit more. But many of these African countries, they are sewn up by China.
Fortunately, it is not too late for them to still bring some significant redress to what they've been doing and what they're currently in vis-a-vis China. But, you know, we'll hope for the best of that. But in the case of Barbados, though, because I like to zoom in on the local thing, I am concerned that over time, since independence, there has not been a sufficient effort to create better balance. As I said, the initiatives equivalent to affirmative action, accompanied by the appropriate ongoing education I'm not talking about the traditional academic education we get now, but education to prepare people to lift themselves up economically. There needs to be an understanding. For example, we have, you were talking about cooperatives and so on earlier, and the possibility of cooperating and doing things. But cooperatives will not work, will not emerge and thrive without the people who you would want to see becoming members of, understanding how they're supposed to work and the full potential therein, even with depending on the nature of the co-op, there being minimal effort on their part. The situation we have, the financial cooperatives have worked very well simply because, yes, you've been able to find the core of people over time who effectively have served to manage and direct these things. The other people merely needed to support by putting in the money and ensuring that things were going a certain way, and they got the return, they got the loans they needed and on the sort of terms they needed. However, we need, apart from financial cooperatives, the business cooperatives. And if we, over time, create a decent environment of education of such, people will recognize that in England, in the U.S., many parts of the world, they will go visit and see businesses operating, they buy products here, and do not even recognize that they're actually cooperatives, these businesses, and what they produce and sell. They're cooperative products. In Canada, dairy industry, grain industry, substantially controlled by large co-ops. So, there is a role there for education on a broad scale that would assist. But there's a lot more you could say on that. But I wanted to move on to a couple other issues. You read a letter earlier from a person who said they're a civil servant, and they got this document asking for submission of certain things, and there was nothing about an option. We've had a lot of discussion throughout the last 2 weeks or so about this thing, and I have been sitting listening to the program, very puzzled as to how people do not understand that it is mandatory for the public servant to be issued the bond. The opt-out if you want to call it, that will occur where they then attempt to sell by indicating they want cash. But what will be issued will be to the public servants in the first place. Did you understand it to be that way?
Yeah, and mandatorily. After a certain level.
Because it's supposed to be a wages and salaries reduction, a reduction of wages and salaries bill on the part of government on one side of the books to present to the IMF. Have you not understood that to be the case?
Essentially, that's what it is.
Right. So what has happened is that there's been a lot of marketing going on to sell acceptance to the public servants. But amidst all the marketing, that fundamental point.
Yeah, but you see, the critical issue here is, will I get my money when I want it? And that's
right.
What they have pointed out. If you don't want to be in it, you can get your money.
Yeah, no, that is understood. But I raise what I raise because a lot of people have still been talking about this thing is not mandatory and that is not mandatory. Public servants will mandatorily have to take the bond. The second part is then what happens so that in net terms, for them, they get cash.
Precisely.
But, right, settled. So, now, the other thing, Cadwell Franklin raised two legal issues. I listened when he was on with Mrs. Gale, and again, I was a bit confused with, you know, some of the callers, including one, several of them. Seemingly wanted to attack him. And my understanding from what Mr. Franklin has raised in each instance, one, about the two deputy commissioners, and secondly, about the legality of issuing bonds as pay, was that he simply was raising the legal aspect, which he does. I happen to have been around a couple of the organizations with which he is associated. I am. And Caswell has done that, where he sees you stepping over the legal line, he raises it. And that is simply what he was doing. Coincidentally, now, I'm not hearing anymore about the matter of the two deputy commissioners. I read about 2 weeks ago, Ezra Allen conceding in the Sunday Sun that, yes, he was correct, but the fall for the instruments not being laid before the House was something to do with public servants and so on, which to me, I could not understand either.
Well, you notice that the government has now moved to take the matter to Parliament.
Precisely.
And,
so,
and what it has done for me is that it now comes across clearly as though the Attorney General was right. And what we heard from the Prime Minister does not square with what the situation really is. So the very fact that they are going to Parliament to make this adjustment
means that it needs to be done.
Yes.
Right. Caswell was right. The Attorney General recognized that, delayed in responding to Caswell, but came out and said, yes, the necessary steps will be taken. Then the Prime Minister came out attacking and claiming it is correct and everything. But any right-thinking person will recognize, hey, no.
And that's important.
You
need to have that kind of scrutiny in the country from time to time. And, you know...
And then when we go on to the bond issue, Caswell, again, none other than Henry Ford, as reported in the Daily Nation of the 4th of September 1991, argued the same point as Caswell, that it is illegal under the Protection of Wages Act to pay in the form
as
of
I
bond.
Said before, so that can be addressed. That can easily be addressed by making an adjustment to the law in Parliament.
Precisely, that's what I'm saying. I haven't heard, because my thinking was, with these things being pointed out, do not attack the person. Look at it, recognize, yes, you're falling short of the legal requirement. Move quickly and fix it.
Well, an interesting question would certainly arise on this question of the constitutionality, where it was pointed out back in 1991 by Sir Henry Ford that the government could not compulsorily make that kind of move. However, if you have a system where money, the bonds are allocated to you without your consent, and then you have to opt out, then that raises the question of the compulsory nature of it and whether that in itself is not the unconstitutional action. That's for the lawyers to work out.
Well, but my own view, as I was saying to you earlier, is that clearly listening to everything, listening to Mr. Greenidge and so on, it is obvious that public servants compulsorily will be issued these bonds. Mr. Greenidge then spent a lot of time going through the mechanics of how they could still end up with the same net amount of cash. But Caswell's argument was not about whether you go into some arrangement like that after. His thing was that the compulsory issuance of bonds is illegal.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution. Democrats in the U.S. Congress are proposing some sweeping legislation to reform the American police. The bill would make it easier to prosecute police for misconduct, and it would ban chokeholds. It comes as Minneapolis lawmakers have vowed to disband that city's police force. This is down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes. I just wanted to read this. My wife has sent me this note saying that she just saw 3 minibuses by Warren's and the conductors outside without masks trying to solicit 2 passengers to come to them. And they were right up in the faces of the passengers. And it just goes on to underscore the extent to which the protocols are not observed by some at all. So...
That's behavior. Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
That discussion you had with the last caller, very educational, and I listened to it with intent, because it was something within the area of learning a process. It seemed as if that person was an attorney. But let me ask you a question. The protocol says 9 or 10.
You mean in terms of numbers?
Yeah.
Attending a march? Or?
The protocol was at 9, as far as public attendance is concerned, including funerals and churches. Then it went to 20.
That's correct.
Then it went to 20. So I want to know now, with this, which I've heard is a march, if it will be still at 10 or if it will be encouraged to the 20. The reason I'm asking that, Mr. Ellis, is that based on what I am figuring, Mr. Denny has now moved from a protest to a march, which I assume that is the angle that should have been taken. But then I am also of the opinion that there's a clash if they remove the Public Order Act from gathering, as far as Mr. Denny is concerned. Because if Denny is asking for 10 people, then the Public Order Act plays a major role in between there, and I think you're aware of this, that any gathering from few people up can be dispersed of by the police a uniform. So it seems as if Mr. Denny is at the same point of being controlled with numbers. Then the second point that I heard again this morning was that he was asked to produce the names of the 10 people. Now, if he has consented to 10 people, he has to be able to consent to 10 names provided as requested by the officer in charge of the march. So I'm hoping that he puts everything in order and he gets everything in place so that people don't get the wrong impression that the police is high-handed. Yes, there's a certain amount of discretion that can be used, a certain amount of understanding that can be used. But you cannot oppose and challenge at the same time. You cannot at least blame the police for carrying out law and order. And then at the same time, you are dismantling what is really law and order. So I'm asking that if he's given 10 people or if he's given 20 people. And if he's given 20 people, I hope that will be clear that he will also provide what is necessary that the police will be asking for. That will be the names of those 20 people. Because he said it's a march. He didn't say it's a protest. And there's something different between a protest and a march. So I don't know if we can get that cleared up between on Saturday.
Okay.
All right?
Yes.